From the KCPW Danker Studios on Library Square, this is Downtown SLC, a show that explores the people, places, and events shaping Utah's urban center. I'm Jason Mathis with the Downtown Alliance, your host. An exciting event happens this afternoon with a partial solar eclipse. This is viewable from multiple locations in the downtown area, but the best place to see it is Clark Planetarium at the Gateway. Clark Planetarium is hosting a viewing party with the correct eyewear to make sure your eyes don't get burned. And joining me today, Seth Jarvis, director of the Clark Planetarium, will be talking about the solar eclipse and all the other worlds that are opened up to young people in Utah at the Clark Planetarium. All of that after this news from the BBC. We are back. You're listening to Downtown SLC on KCPW. I'm your host, Jason Mathis, with the Downtown Alliance. Joining me today is my new friend, Seth Jarvis. Seth is the director of Clark Planetarium. Seth, thanks for being here.
Glad to be here.
We've not just you, our whole community, really the whole world, I don't know, maybe the whole solar system, has some exciting stuff happening this afternoon. Can you talk a little bit about the solar eclipse?
Let's narrow it to North America.
Okay, fine. Okay, so what's too expansive in my perspective.
Okay, so here's the deal. Starting a little after 3 o'clock this afternoon, weather permitting, and it's looking pretty favorable, The shadow of the moon will fall on portions of the Earth. Now, this is not going to be a total solar eclipse. We're only getting a partial eclipse. But beginning a little after 3 o'clock and going until about 5:30, you're going to see some portion of the sun blotted out by the moon. And so if you've got the proper eyewear, and we need to talk about how to protect your vision.
I know that's important.
But peaking around 4:30 p.m. today, you're going to have about half of the sun covered up by the moon. And this partial eclipse, think of it as a kind of a dress rehearsal for the full eclipse that we're going to get in August of 2017. So people should get their methodology down for looking safely at the sun. So it's cool to see a partial eclipse today, but just think of it as preparation for the total solar eclipse, August 21st, 2017. It's going to slice across North America from Oregon to South Carolina, and people in Utah will totally want to be ready for that one.
Oh, that's very cool. Can you explain a little bit the dynamics of what happens during an eclipse? So what's happening that makes this half the sun disappear?
Okay, so what's going on is everybody should know. I mean, these days you kind of have to make sure about that. As the moon orbits the Earth, once a month you have full moon, once a month you have new moon, and that's when the moon is in a direct line with the sun. But because the moon is a little bit above or below the sun, you can have the moon in line with the sun but not getting in front of the sun or directly behind it. Now, 2 weeks ago, we had the lunar eclipse, which was visible and the moon turned blood red, and that was when the Earth's shadow fell on the moon. Well, now 2 weeks later, the moon's on the other side of its orbit. Now it's between the sun and us, and now the moon gets in front of the sun. This happens a couple of times a year, and so the moon is actually literally in a direct line with the sun. And in our case, it will block out about half of the sun. People should go to the clarkplanetarium.org website, and we've got animations and stuff on a YouTube channel and that sort of thing you can find out about. Even find us on Facebook, and you'll see links to that stuff. But anyway, as the moon orbits the Earth, it occasionally gets in front of the sun as seen by places on Earth. And in Salt Lake City and the Wasatch Front, what we'll see is about half of the moon go in front of the sun and block it out. The farther north you get, the more you get. It doesn't quite get totality at the North Pole, but the best possible place to see this eclipse would be at the North Pole.
Okay, very cool. How often does this happen?
Technically speaking, it happens a couple of times a year, but remember the moon's shadow on the Earth is very small, and it's a big planet. So most of the time, that lunar shadow on the Earth's surface happens in the South Indian Ocean,
right.
It happens in the North Pacific, or it happens over, West Asia, in which case nobody knows where it is.
Right.
But when it falls across North America every few years, it's kind of a big deal. Remember in May of 2012, we had that annular eclipse that got everybody excited.
Yeah.
So they do happen with some, frequency, but not so often that everybody goes ho-hum about it.
Right. It's kind of a a big deal.
It is kind of a big deal because this is real life astronomy that anybody can do. If you've got the right eye protection, just go outside and look up. You're doing astronomy.
So I know this is important. We want to talk about eye protection because you can do a lot of damage to your
permanent
eyes.
Permanent vision loss.
Yeah. You
can't stress that enough.
Do not look directly in the sun.
And it's not just because of the eclipse. It's dangerous to look at the sun anytime.
Right.
It's just that during the eclipse, people want to look at the sun.
That's when people
normally
happen
you don't, you normally don't have to persuade people not to look at the sun.
Right.
But at the eclipse, they've kind of got a reason to. So here's the deal. Doubling up sunglasses, not going to work.
Right.
Trying to use a candle soot, you know, to soot up some glass, that doesn't work. The only safe way to look at the sun is to do one of three things. One, go buy yourself a pair of solar eclipse glasses. We sell them at the planetarium. Other people have them. They're pretty cheap, like $2 a pair.
Right.
And those are specially filtered aluminized mylar. They block out the harmful radiation of the sun. And you can, and trust me, with these glasses, the only thing you'll see is the sun. You're not, you're never going to wear them driving. It's
right.
just too dark. The other option is to go get some grade 14 welder's plate. If you know somebody that does arc welding, not regular welding, not oxygen acetylene, it's got to be arc welding grade 14. That kind of arc welding glass is okay.
That's more expensive than $2.
It's way
probably.
More expensive, but you can get them at like welding supply stores.
Okay.
And then the third, which is a really simple thing to do, is to make what's called a pinhole projection, where you just get a little piece of cardboard and poke a little teeny hole through it, literally like get a thumbtack-sized hole through a little piece of cardstock, and then let that light project through the hole onto a piece of white paper some distance from away. So a couple of feet away between the pinhole and the white piece of paper. Another thing to do is to just get, you know, borrow your grandma's magnifying glass.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of using your magnifying lens to burn ants, you should never do that.
No.
But, in, you know, but
no
basically.
No listeners of this show would ever do that.
No, don't do that. But you'll discover that you could use that lens to project an image of the sun with the moon eating a piece of it just onto some surface, you know, on the sidewalk or something
right.
like that. But don't try and look at the sun just with your eyes or with a couple of, you know, by doubling up on a pair of sunglasses. Not going to work.
Not going to work. And it sounds to me, as a parent, as somebody who's interested in this, who wants to participate in some way, I'm thinking that the glasses that you all are providing is going to be the simplest
thing
solution.
To do. So, and honestly, here's a cool way to do it. Come join us.
Yeah.
I know that there's going to be eclipse watching parties up at the Utah Museum of Natural History. The planetarium is hosting viewing parties at the Olympic Fountain at the Gateway and at Wheeler Farm out on 9th East and 63rd or 64th South. Anyway, so we've got locations set up, one downtown, one at Wheeler Farm. The folks up at the Museum of Natural History have got it going on their place. And if you have questions that you or your kids want to ask about the solar eclipse, we'd be happy to talk to you. I mean, we live for this stuff.
Yeah. You seem very excited.
It's cool because this is the way you connect with the cosmos. This is the way you say to yourself, oh, look, we live in a really active, dynamic, and visually beautiful and fascinating universe.
Yeah. So how many people are you expecting this afternoon for the viewing party? Is you going to have a big crowd?
Hundreds.
Yeah.
Hundreds. Let me put it to you this way. When we had the annular eclipse.
And what's the difference? Because I've heard you use that word annular. What does that
annular,
mean?
Annular, it refers to an annulus, meaning a ring, hence the word annular, you know, annual.
Okay.
So the annular eclipse is when the moon is fully in front of the sun, but because of a peculiarity in orbit, it's not quite big enough to blot out the sun. So you get this little Cheerio.
Yeah,
this
I
little
remember
kind of
that.
A hula hoop sun
where
it's all black in the center except for a really fine circle. That's not what's going to happen this afternoon. What you're going to be seeing today is just about half of the sun clipped by the moon as it drifts past it. And like I say, it begins about 3:05, reaches its peak at about 4:30, and by about 5:20 p.m., it's pretty much over.
Cool. So it'll look kind of like a cookie with a bite taken.
It'll look like somebody taking a big honking bite out of the cookie. And speaking of big honking,
yes.
we talked about this earlier.
Yes.
There is a big honking sunspot on the sun right now. So you don't have to wait for the eclipse to start. Use those solar glasses, and if you use grandma's magnifying glass, you can see this also by projecting it. There's a huge sunspot on the sun right now, many, many times bigger than planet Earth, and that is a solar storm responsible for all kinds of interesting things going on in terms of the solar wind and impacts on Earth. But you can see that with your eclipse glasses, just without magnification. Just put on the glasses and look at the sun, and bang, there it is.
So I did this just before we started the show, and it's actually very cool.
It's huge. This, it's kind of right there in
dot,
the middle.
Right in the middle of the sun, but yeah. I had to use the glasses.
Right, yeah. The only way to do it is to use the correct glasses or that number 14 welder's plate or pinhole projection or get a magnifying lens and project it onto a big piece of paper or something.
Everyone, do yourself a favor. Just go get the glasses.
Or just come visit with us.
Come visit.
I say, Wheeler Farm or Gateway Olympic Fountain, or go head up to the Museum of Natural History.
Yeah.
We'll all be happy to talk to you.
That's awesome. And it's a great family-friendly activity. I know. When there was the ring,
the annular eclipse.
Mm-hmm. My son and wife and I all got on our back patio and
people
just watched
went
it.
Nuts.
It was so cool.
People went nuts. Yep.
We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we are going to talk more about what's happening at Clark Planetarium. Joining me today, my guest, Seth Jarvis, who is the director of Clark Planetarium. We will be back after these messages. We are back. You are listening to Downtown SLC on KCPW. I'm your host, Jason Mathis, joined today by Seth Jarvis. Seth is the director of Clark Planetarium. A big activity planned for this afternoon with the partial solar eclipse, but there's a lot of things happening at Clark Planetarium all the time. What do you see as really the role of Clark Planetarium in our community?
It's critically important in a variety of ways for people to be scientifically literate. Mm-hmm. There are really huge public policy decisions that require input from the public so that we know what we're going to do responding as a nation. And whether it's what kind of biology classes are taught in our public schools, or what is our reaction to climate change, or what are we supposed to think about GMOs, or what are we supposed to think about medical testing and, you know, all of those things. Science literacy is necessary so that you can have an informed conversation. And without that, you're never going to be happy with the answers you come up with.
Yeah.
So the planetarium exists because what the research tells everybody these days is that a phenomenon known as informal science education, that is the science education that you teach yourself or that you expose your family to, that is outside the classroom. Mm-hmm. The informal experiences are hugely influential and predictive of how well you do informal science education.
So if you have a natural curiosity for something, like an eclipse is a great example, but it could be anything. You're interested in the moon, you're interested in Mars, or you just want to understand more about our planet. It seems so much easier to learn when you are interested in it to begin with.
Families are talking about it. Friends are talking about it. Yeah. You've got your brothers and sisters and your buddies from down the block, and you're just talking about it. The fact that science education takes place in an informal, almost play-like setting does more to imprint interest in science on the brain than what happens formally in the classroom. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that while the formal education is required, formal education works when there is informal education going on. You know, the example is the parent who reads a book about a spider to a child, Charlotte's Web.
Yeah.
You know, you read those books and then the child is in class and has to learn about arachnids as a type of insect or bug, whatever you call them. Point is, you learn those things and it stays with you. Your retention and ability to synthesize ideas into other disciplines goes through the roof. So parents, if you want your kids to be scientifically literate, then go have some fun and talk about why the moon changes phases from day to day, why the sun sets in a different place along the horizon from month to month, why the stars overhead are different in October than they are in April. You know, those things.
And what if, and I may be throwing myself into this example, what if you as a parent are not terribly science literate? Where can you find the answers that you can then share with your kids?
That's the beauty of informal science education facilities like the Clark Planetarium, and that is it's designed to be accessible and approachable by people of all levels. And we are undertaking a two-year, many million-dollar overhaul of our science exhibits expressly for the purpose of making it a place where families come down at many levels and there's a kind of an engagement interactivity where people are meant to experience the science exhibits in a let's talk about what we're doing here environment. The kids think they're playing they're playing, but they're also learning. The parents can interact with them and see what they're doing and talk about the phenomena that the children are experiencing. That's the most valuable science education you can give a child.
Well, it's so much easier, too. Like, if kids are learning while they're playing, that's what...
It's like those commercials. You want to feel better and different after you leave. You want that energy, that buzz to stay with you. And so this new exhibit overhaul that we're doing, it'll probably be completed about... It actually gets started about a year from now and will be completed in late 2016. And it's a complete renovation of our science exhibits. With the purpose of giving you a reason to leave and then stay connected via your personal technology so that after you have a great experience playing with the science exhibits, you then drive home and continue playing with the exhibits on your smartphone.
Yeah. Let's talk about what else people can do. So what I'd like to invite you to come back when the exhibit starts to change over and we can talk about what you're planning and then as you go
through
it.
The process of designing science exhibits is really neat.
I bet it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
What are the other things that people can do? You guys have, I will say this, you guys have been just outstanding partners with us with an event produced by the Downtown Alliance called EVE. And the shows that you produce that people can go to with our EVE Pass sell out. It's one of the most popular things. And people, I hope that if people are not familiar with the Clark Planetarium, that this provides a way for them to come down kind of risk-free because they paid for their EVE Pass and have this cool experience. So what are the sort of experiences that people can have in addition to the exhibits?
So the science exhibits are free. There's no charge. Mm-hmm. But in the building, we have two theaters. We have the ATK IMAX Theater, and that's an IMAX theater dedicated to nonfiction science and nature documentaries. Mm-hmm. So most people remember the IMAX films of the old days as documentaries. These days, mostly IMAX is associated with Hollywood blockbusters. Sure. We're the only IMAX theater in Utah dedicated to nonfiction educational science and nature shows.
But I want to point out, sometimes when people hear nonfiction, scientific, educational, it gives the impression that it might not be exciting, and that is not the case.
No, it's wonderful. Exciting. These are really cool. Come see Hubble. Come see pandas. Yeah. We just opened a 3D movie about pandas. Oh, wow. That's the cutest doggone thing you've ever seen. And you learn about these fascinating bears and the people in China who have the very difficult task of caring for them, and in the case of this particular film, the pandas have to be looked after by a research and care facility that was devastated by an earthquake. Mm. And these naturalists and these veterinarians and the people who just care about the well-being of these wild animals, they're having to sort of pick up the pieces of their research facility while at the same time not skipping a beat with these incredibly sensitive animals. And let's not kid ourselves. The film footage of the baby pandas is to just die for.
Well, and in an IMAX.
In an IMAX movie, trust me, you're going to, it's better than anything you see on Facebook.
You guys have stuff like this rolling through
all the time. We're changing the films all the time. The other theater we have a dome theater. It's called the Hanson Dome Theater. And in that theater, we show programs that we ourselves produce. And what people don't realize is that the star shows that the Clark Planetarium produces in its dome, we turn around and distribute to planetariums all around the world.
Oh, really?
And so the chances are good that if you visit a planetarium in Athens, Greece, or in Moscow, or in Japan, or Australia, or Latin America, or Germany, our shows are all over the place. And between us and Evans and Sutherland Computer Corporation up in Research Park, because they make the equipment and they also make star shows, something like 3/4 of all the planetarium shows made in the world come out of Salt Lake City, Utah. We're kind of like the Hollywood of planetarium shows.
Wow. And so I think most people would not know
that. They don't know that, and it's one of the weird things that our reputation in the world of planetarium star show production is huge, and people in the local market just sort of assume that, oh, well, that's what you guys do. Well, yeah, the quality of the show that we have here in Salt Lake City is possible because we make shows that we sell around the world, which makes enough money to support the cost of producing shows that are as good as they are here in Salt Lake City.
Yeah. What do you see as the future for the planetarium? 5 years from now, 10 years from now, as you direct this critical element of downtown, this critical element of scientific education for the larger community, where do you want to be?
I always want there to be, and this is not just me talking, this is anybody in the business.
Yeah.
You want to always give the public an easily accessible, all ages appropriate conduit to the exciting space science and astronomy, space exploration news. Because we're seeing the news headlines. I am not making this up. You're seeing scientists announcing that they are creating a working tractor beam.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're having other people working on the theoretical physical reality of faster than light travel. You have real technology in terms of building the rocket, the crew capsule of which will be tested in December, that is capable of not only returning astronauts to the moon, but to the asteroids, to Mars, and to Jupiter. Wow. So the real world near future space exploration of the solar system is creating news that people want to learn about. And then there's all this weird stuff that people are sharing on Facebook, and there's YouTube videos, and they go, is that real? Is that really happening? I read about this in Wired magazine, or I saw this YouTube video. And they want a place to check in. And so when there's new announcements about super, super, super massive black holes in teeny tiny galaxies and why that matters in terms of our understanding about how planets are formed, and we have those free public lectures at the planetarium, we're the place that offers that window to the universe that the public can go, yeah, when I need to get my fix on what's up in the skies, when I want that cosmic connection, I just go find out what's going on at the Clark Planetarium.
I'm kind of getting chills when you talk about that. It's really exciting.
It's really cool. And what's strange is, like, you know, we are all familiar with warp drive and transporters and tractor beams as a science fiction phenomena, in exactly the same way that people 200 years ago made science fiction out of the idea of flight.
Yeah.
And now, or communication other than yelling at each other.
Right. The future is here today.
So the stuff that freaks us out as science fiction in our great-grandkids' lives will be like, I can't believe those guys lived without this.
Yeah.
And if you tried to go back to your great-great-grandparents and describe to them your iPhone, they'd think you were nuts.
Yeah.
Well, I'm here to tell you that this pace of is accelerating at a breakneck speed, and the information can be kind of overwhelming. And everybody is like, we're all getting ADHD because of all this information we're trying to digest. Where do you go to get reliable information where if you need someone to explain to you, is that real?
Yeah.
Is that really happening? We do shows on that. We say, yeah, there's all kinds of interesting stuff. And we've got a really talented staff of people who live to just try and explain stuff to people because we think personally it's so cool.
It is very cool. Remind everybody one last time where to go for information about the solar eclipse today and for more information on programs at the Clark Planetarium.
Eclipse starts a little after 3 o'clock, goes till about 5:30. Peak is about 4:30 p.m. Get your safety glasses from the Clark Planetarium, and observing locations are at Wheeler Farm out on 9th East and about 64th South, or at the University of Utah Museum of Natural History up in Research Park, or with the planetarium staff down at the gateway in the Olympic Fountain.
And all this information is available on your website.
ClarkPlanetarium.org.
Seth, thanks so much for being my guest today.
My pleasure.
Really,
it was fun.
Really great. Hi, this is Jason Mathis, host of KCPW's Downtown SLC. If you enjoy this program or any of the 6 local shows KCPW produces, including Behind the Headlines or the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour, consider taking a moment to pledge your support to KCPW. All you have to do is go to kcpw.org and click on the Build Public Radio button on the homepage. KCPW is a community-funded public radio station, so your support is critical to our continued success. Thanks for listening, and thanks for making Downtown SLC possible.